and welcome to the Dream Season Podcast, an oral history of the 1989-90 UConn men's basketball season, also known as the Dream Season. This is Episode 11, The Regular Season Wraps Up. Following the win over Fairfield, UConn entered the final stretch of the regular season. The road ahead presented plenty of challenges for the Huskies. The Huskies had completed the non-conference portion of their schedule, and seven conference matchups remained. Three of the matchups were home games at Campbell Pavilion, sandwiched between two sets of road games. Two of those road games were against the two teams currently jockeying for first place with the Huskies, Syracuse and Georgetown. UConn was currently ranked number 8 in the country, had a 20-3 overall record, and a Big East record of 7-2, a half game behind Georgetown for first place, and a half game ahead of Syracuse. They were riding a 10-game winning streak, including seven consecutive Big East wins. The key to the Huskies' success has been their defense, specifically their full-court pressure defense. Here's Nadav Hennefeld and Jim Calhoun speaking about the defense back in the spring of 1990.
We had our offense, but our game was more based on defense.
We really, truly, I think, understood that we could win any game if we were able to control from the defensive end. And once again, it fed on itself. The self-belief became, to us, a truth. I mean, we really believed that we could do it in any particular given game, and obviously we did.
In an effort to confuse opposing offenses, Jim Calhoun unleashed a multitude of defensive looks on UConn opponents. Man-to-man, 2-3, and 1-3-1 half-court zones, and of course, the variations of the full-court press. The most effective of the full-court pressure defense was the 2-2-1 press. The first two in the 2-2-1 referred to the guards, most often Chris Smith and Tate George. They would be the first line of defense as the opponent inbounds the ball under their own hoop. Tate and Smitty would attempt to force the ball handler towards the sidelines, where they could trap the ball handler, but more often than not, their pressure would result in a poor pass as the ball handler attempted to throw the ball over half court to avoid a 10-second violation. That pass would often be intercepted by one of the other two in the 2-2-1, Scott Burrell or Nadav Hennefeld. Hennefeld's 98 steals had already broken the UConn single-season record, as well as the NCAA record for most steals in a season by a freshman after just 23 games. Tate George, who has 44 steals on the season, is just 9 away from passing Corney Thompson to become the UConn career leader in steals. In the last line of defense, the one was played by the big man, usually Rod Sellers. The Huskies have 315 total steals after 23 games, an average of 13.7 steals per game. By comparison, the 1988-89 Huskies had 275 steals in 31 games. The Steel Curtain defense had forced 490 turnovers so far, an average of 21.3 per game. But the relentless full-court pressure defense does a lot more than just force turnovers. Jim Calhoun, quote, "The reason I've always liked pressing, and I think it shows in this team and my Northeastern teams, is that I always thought it got us going in the first part of the game. In my first 3 years here, we had a tough time getting out of the gate. One thing a press does is get the blood flowing right off the bat. You're not standing around. You don't really think about offense. You're really getting involved through the defense." End quote. Chris Smith would come to be known for his scoring prowess, but he recalls how important defense was to his game.
Defense was a big integral part of my life growing up. And, you know, we had a lot of guys that grew up in my neighborhood that could really play the game. Johnny Jones from St. Joe's ended up going to Fairfield U. We had Roy Rogers play with me at Kobe Cathedral, really good player. Milton Petway grew up around me, and he ended up going to Sacred Heart. So I was around good guards. Joe Wallace that grew up with me, he went D1. So every day was a challenge at the Senior Center in Bridgeport. And so when I got to UConn, I already had that instilled within me that, you know, I'm going to lock people down. So and I felt like I can I was quick enough to really guard any player out there. And I took that to heart.
Co-captain Steve Peichel recalls facing UConn's press in practice daily.
It was the combination of players, really, and the skill sets. I mean, we had great length. Tate George was long. Scott Burrell was long, you know, Murray Williams, these guys were long, Rod Sellers, and Chris Smith was as good an on-the-ball defender as there is ever in college basketball. Everyone talks about how many points he scored. Chris Smith's ability to defend on the ball was, like, elite. And then we had Nadav Hennefeld in the back, who was, like, the ultimate safety. I mean, he just, his anticipation was unbelievable. And then Rod could really move out of the five spot too. Just an unbelievable team with the 2-2-1 and the way we could You know, coach did an unbelievable job of changing it up. We could really be a man-to-man team. We could be a zone team. We could trap in corners. We could trap over half court. We could do a lot of different things out of it. So we just kept getting better and better in that. And I remember going against it in practice sometimes, and it was like there was like eight people on the court. You know, and Scott Burrell, so athletic, and Tate's length, and the Dove just being able to read passes, you know, just a really great combination of guys that were really fit, their talents were fit for that pressure.
Finally, Rod Sellers thinks back on how difficult it must have been to play against their defense and how it's still a topic of conversation amongst he and his teammates to this day.
Man, we were all over the court. You got Smitty and Tate up front pressing like crazy. You got two of the greatest steel people in UConn history, Scott and the Dove on the second line, who were kicking off everything. And I was doing the back. You know, you brought in Lyman. I'm like, damn, Lyman is everywhere. Murray, who was, I would say Murray was like an incredible athlete because of how long he was and the things that he could accomplish. Yeah, Murray here and there. And then you brought John in, another pressure up front. You brought Steve. I mean, it was like, Jesus Christ, he had to be impossible to play against because we were everywhere. And I mean, it just caught like wildfire.
The next test for the Steel Curtain defense was a visit to the Carrier Dome for a rematch with Syracuse on Saturday, February 10th. The Orangemen were the number 6 team in the country and were looking to move past UConn in the Big East standings. Syracuse had won 5 straight games, including a 19-point win at Georgetown, after installing Michael Edwards as a starting point guard over David Johnson, following back-to-back losses in mid-January. Anticipation for this top 10 showdown was, according to Syracuse Sports Information Director Larry Kimball, quote, "at the same as when Georgetown comes here," end quote. The Carrier Dome was sold out earlier in the week, setting an NCAA on-campus attendance record of 32,820. Fueled by the crowd, Syracuse jumped out to a quick 11-0 lead to start the game. Rod Sellers scored the first points of the night for UConn at the 16:26 mark. Syracuse's up-tempo offense was negating UConn's pressure defense, and the Orangemen's man-to-man defense was sealing off passing lanes, forcing the Huskies to fire away from the outside. With UConn down 13, the Huskies began to make a run. They trimmed the deficit to 7 at 36:29 when the key moment of the game occurred. After a Syracuse miss, the Huskies looked to fast break. From half court, Tate George spotted Scott Burrell cutting towards the hoop and lofted a long alley-oop pass. The pass was offline, and Burrell couldn't corral it. Burrell grabbed the rim on his way down and was called for a technical foul. Derek Coleman proceeded to make both free throws. On the ensuing possession, Syracuse patiently worked the ball, resulting in a Billy Owens three-pointer to push the Orange lead to 41-29 with a minute 25 left in the half. The first half ended with Syracuse up 43-31. As the scoreboard indicated, the Orangemen dominated the first half. They shot a blistering 58.1% from the floor. The Huskies were the polar opposite, shooting a paltry 33%. UConn starters only accounted for 4 field goals in the half. Chris Smith was 0-for-6. Off the bench, John Gwynn and Scott Burrell scored 21 of the 31 UConn points. Gwynn entered the game and hit 3 consecutive three-pointers, ending the half with 13 points on 4-of-7 shooting. Burrell tallied 8 points and went 3-of-4 from the field. The first part of the second half saw more of the same from Syracuse. The Steel Curtain failed to slow down the Syracuse offense, and the Orange maintained their comfortable lead for most of the half. However, the Huskies did not fold. With 7 minutes and 58 seconds left in the game and trailing 65-50, UConn increased their defensive intensity. Chris Smith hit a 3-pointer with 5:23 left to make the score 71-64 Syracuse. A Tate George 3 made it a 6-point game, 75-69, with 3:16 remaining. Syracuse pushed their lead back to 79-69 with 2:11 left, but UConn wasn't done fighting. John Gwynn hit 2 free throws with 32 seconds remaining to bring UConn to within 4 at 88-84. Lyman DePriest fouled LaRon Ellis, sending him to the line to shoot a 1-and-1. Ellis missed the front end, and UConn controlled the rebound. Nadav Hennefeld launched a 3-pointer with 18 seconds left, but it was short, and Cuse grabbed the rebound. The Orange iced the game from the foul line, and the final score was Syracuse 90, UConn 86. Syracuse made 15 of 21 free throws in the final 6 minutes of the game to earn the victory. The Huskies had lost for the first time since January 2nd, when they had lost by 31 points at St. John's. Just as in that game, the UConn defense was unable to slow the offensive attack by their opponent. The Huskies only had 6 steals and forced only 12 Syracuse turnovers, both of which were season lows. Derek Coleman had a career-high 29 points and 12 rebounds for the Orangemen. Chris Smith led the way for UConn with 25 points, all of which came in the second half. He scored 23 in the final 11 minutes and 15 seconds of the game. John Gwynn added 15 for the Huskies, who set a school record with 12 three-pointers made. Aside from the poor defensive performance, UConn was hurt by the lack of production from the inside. The trio of Rod Sellers, Dan Srulik, and Terrena Walker combined for 2 points and 10 rebounds. By contrast, the Syracuse big men, Coleman, Ellis, and Stephen Thompson, had 62 points and 22 rebounds as a group. Jim Calhoun, quote, "That was a big difference. The inside donut really showed up. I'm not knocking those guys, but Terrena didn't look that sad when I took him out. We're going to have to get more out of the middle," end quote. The Huskies' 10-game winning streak was over, and they were now 20-4 overall and 7-3 in the Big East, falling to third place behind Georgetown and Syracuse. When the new Associated Press Top 25 poll was released on Monday, February 12th, UConn fell 2 spots to number 10. Georgetown and Syracuse each moved up 2 spots and were now number 3 and 4, respectively. Later that same night, Syracuse lost to Villanova, 60-56. The Huskies stayed on the road for their next game, a visit to the Fitzgerald Fieldhouse to take on Pittsburgh on Tuesday, February 13th. UConn defeated Pitt 79-61 on January 6th at the Civic Center, but Pitt entered the game hot. They had won 4 of their last 5 games, scoring over 100 points in 3 of those games. Their 117 points in their last game against Providence set a Big East record, which still stands entering the 2023-24 Big East season. Lyman DePriest replaced Murray Williams in the starting lineup, joining the usual 4 of Tate George, Chris Smith, Nadav Hennefeld, and Rod Sellers. The Huskies started strong, jumping out to a 6-0 lead on back-to-back 3-pointers from Chris Smith. Pitt hung tough, eventually taking a 16-15 lead. Then, at the 9:13 mark, things got a little nutty. After Hennefeld stole the ball from Darrell Porter, Porter fouled Nadav, sending him to the line for a 1-1. As he made the first free throw, Pitt's Brian Shorter was called for an intentional foul for elbowing Rod Sellers in the head.
Shoots a little under 70% at the line.
They got an intentional here now. Shorter. Paul Evans up. And this is an
There's a technical foul on Evans.
Now you got 2, 4, and a ball.
Now you got another technical. That's 6 shots plus the ball. Wow. Ted Valentine getting his work in early. We're only midway through the first half. Evans hit with 2 technicals.
I think Paul was mad at the drop step by Shorter being called a charge. And now on the free throw, the banging, and that can change the complexion of the game. That's not a good situation for Paul.
Hennefeld made a 2nd shot. Sellers missed his 2, but Chris Smith made all 4 of the technical free throws. The Huskies maintained possession, and Hennefeld scored on a driving layup. All told, it was an 8-point possession, and UConn led 23-16. The Huskies maintained the lead for the rest of the first half, but the margin shrunk. With UConn up 36-35, they looked to score on the final possession of the half.
Shot clock at 12. Now inside 10, they look to Burrell. Gwynn gets it back. He's double-teamed on the side, gets away. Burrell down low, Hennefeld from behind, lays it in.
What a look by Burrell from deep, and the snap. Hennefeld really alert, even to the end, challenging the shot.
Smart 3-point halftime lead on a great feed to Hennefeld, who just kind of curled it around, and it rolled in.
He never got full possession, but look at this from the top of the key, and the defense caught napping. But you're right, shot with the underarm, but a good follow through.
It is 38-35 at halftime.
Chris Smith led the way for UConn in the opening half, scorching the Panthers for 18 points, including 4 3-pointers. Late in the half, Pitt switched to a box-and-one defense on Smith in an effort to limit his scoring. The strategy lasted through the rest of the game with other junk defenses, such as a diamond-and-one and triangle-and-two thrown in for good measure. Technically, the strategy worked. Smith was held to just 4 points in the second half. However, the focus on Smith created additional space for Nadav Hennefeld to work with. Hennefeld scored 19 of his career-high 27 points in the second half. UConn had a 60-51 lead with 11:26 left in the game, but as was the case earlier, the Panthers wouldn't go away. With the Huskies up 64-59, fans in Connecticut held their breath as Rod Sellers and Pitt's Bobby Martin became entangled while battling for a rebound.
Ooh, down they go, and the foul is on Bobby Martin.
And the leg went under.
We've got a hurt player. Sellers is down in pain right along the lane.
Well, when he went down, his leg was underneath Jimmy Calhoun trying to calm him down. Oh.
Mary Neubelt is the trainer who, along with Calhoun, comes out. What the Huskies don't need.
No. No
injuries.
They need him to, you know, I heard him read his lips there. He said, I'm okay. I think the scare or fear, whenever you get a leg trapped underneath, you take a look at it as Bobby Martin gets caught on the rear. He helps Cerulic, and then Sellers comes in strong, and just, it's almost a daily occurrence in football, and how he came out of that unscathed is a miraculous situation.
Sellers limped off, but eventually returned to the game a few minutes later, even scoring a basket and grabbing two key rebounds. The Huskies were clinging to a 74-73 lead as the clock moved to under a minute. After Smith missed a runner in the lane, Pitt looked to take the lead.
Smith's turnaround is short. Good rebound by Shorter. Pitt can take the lead. Kavanaugh pushes it up, looks to Porter, finds Martin. Bobby starts down the lane. Along the baseline now, works his way inside, loses the ball. Porter, off the glass, no good. Tipped up once, batted back, and a foul called on Shorter. Brian Shorter gets the foul call.
First debris coming out. He must have reached up and grabbed Hennefeld in frustration as he couldn't come up and convert. He couldn't ask for better shots, could you?
Panthers had their opportunities inside.
The Panthers missed three putbacks at the rim before eventually fouling Hennefeld on a rebound attempt. Hennefeld made two free throws, and after Pitt missed a shot in their next possession, Nadeau made two more to give the Huskies a 78-73 lead. After a Pitt basket, Tate George made two more free throws to seal the game, and UConn left Pitt with a hard-fought 80-77 victory. Here's WFSB's Phil Andrews, along with Chris Smith and Jim Calhoun, to recap the win.
The 10th-ranked Huskies not only won the opening tip-off, but also jumped out to a 6-0 lead courtesy of back-to-back three-pointers from Chris Smith, who, by the way, finished with 22 on the night. And it wasn't until 3 minutes into the game that Pittsburgh finally got on the scoreboard when Brian Shorter collected a couple in the paint here. As a matter of fact, the Panthers led it by one with 9 minutes and 48 seconds remaining in the first half. That was 16-15 with Darrell Porter's drive to the bank here. But during a bizarre sequence inside the 8-minute mark, the Panthers were slapped with a shooting foul, intentional foul, and back-to-back technicals on Pitt coach Paul Evans. And with a possible 8 points staring him in the face, the Huskies sunk 6 to take a 5-point 21-16 lead.
Yeah, I just was really concentrating on the rim and everything like that, and I just hit him.
After trailing 38-35 at the break, Pittsburgh opened the second half with a 6-2 run to take a 39-38 lead. But with Connecticut back on top, 47-46, the Huskies put together a 13-5 run of their own, helped in part by their defense. Nadav Hennefeld with the steal coast-to-coast for the bucket plus the foul. Hennefeld with 27 points on the night. That made it 58-51 UConn. And Tate George may not have had a big night scoring-wise, but comes up with a steal here, pushes the ball up court to Smith, who lays it up and in, 60-51 UConn, as they hold on for the 80-77 victory.
And they're a quality team. I would say that Phil, I can't think of any more gratifying wins this year. I mean it honestly. That's a here situation for us to kind of stand up at the end was tremendous.
And so with tonight's 80-77 win over Pittsburgh, the Huskies not only end an 11-game home win streak for the Panthers, but they also up their Big East record to 8-3, their overall record to 21-4, and up next, three consecutive Big East home games against Boston College, Providence, and Seton Hall. In Pittsburgh, I'm Phil Andrews, Channel 3, Eyewitness News.
Hennefeld and Smith were the only Huskies in double figures. Tate George, who was hampered by back spasms, had a quiet night, but once again etched his name in the UConn record book. He played in the 115th game of his career and passed Bruce Kaczynski, Mike McKay, and Corny Thompson to become UConn's all-time leader in games played. The win was UConn's first win at Pitt since January of 1984 and improved the Huskies' record to 21-4 and 8-3 in the Big East. And thanks to Providence defeating Georgetown, the Huskies also moved back into a tie for first place in the Big East with Georgetown, both teams a half a game ahead of Syracuse. Jim Calhoun gave the road-weary Huskies a day off on Wednesday in order to rest up for what he referred to as a New England championship, games against Boston College on Saturday and Providence on Monday, both at Gamble Pavilion. Calhoun was trying to ensure his team wouldn't suffer a letdown against BC, who entered the game last in the Big East standings with a 1-10 conference record. Early on, it seemed as if Calhoun's fears would become reality. Boston College led for most of the first 8 minutes of the game. With just over 12 minutes left in the first half, the Eagles were up 14-9. Then things changed quickly. Over the next 4 minutes, the Huskies blitzed BC with a 22-3 run to take a 31-17 lead. UConn entered the locker room leading 43-32 at halftime. It was an ugly first half, with both teams combining for 19 turnovers. Rod Sellers, playing without a knee brace, led the Huskies with 10 first-half points. The second half was nearly a carbon copy of the first half, minus the part where Boston College led. UConn steadily increased its lead over the first 8 minutes of the second half, eventually going up 70-48. Boston College never threatened from there, and the final score was UConn 89, Boston College 67. There were a total of 54 fouls in the game, 33 committed by BC. There were also 42 total turnovers. It was not a classic, but it was another win. The Huskies kept pace with Georgetown at the top of the Big East standings at 9-3. The nine Big East wins were the most UConn has ever won in a Big East season. Five Huskies finished in double figures, led by John Gwynn's career-high 18 points, coming in only 17 minutes. Sellers and Tate George had 16, Hennefeld 15, and Chris Smith had 13. Hennefeld was outscored by his teammate on the Israeli national team, Lior Arditi, who finished with a game-high 20 points for BC. The Huskies would have to be more focused in order to vanquish their next opponent, Providence, on Monday, February 19th. UConn defeated PC by 15 on February 3rd in an extremely physical game at Providence, but the Friars have been playing better since that meeting. They knocked off both Georgetown and St. John's in the past week and were fighting to stay in the hunt for an NCAA tournament bid. Prior to the game, more honors rolled in for the Huskies. They had moved up four spots in the Associated Press Top 25, sitting now at number 6, their highest ranking ever. Nadav Hennefeld was once again named Big East Rookie of the Week, earning the award for the third time. Mike Gorman and Clark Kellogg set the stage for another ESPN Big Monday matchup.
The Storrs Field House was the home for Connecticut basketball for 36 years, and for most of the last 10, the Huskies labored near the bottom of the Big East Conference. But Connecticut begins the 90s in a brand new building, with new weapons, a newfound confidence, and in a new position. The Huskies are on top of the Big East. And they are ready here at the Gampel Pavilion on the campus of the University of Connecticut. A brand new building, and as we said, a brand new feeling. Number 6 in the country. The highest ranking, as John pointed out, ever for the Connecticut Huskies. And they're going to face a hot team tonight in the Providence College Friars. And we've got a good one coming up on Big Monday. I'm Mike Gorman, along with Clark Kellogg. And I immediately, when I look at this Connecticut team, think back to Seton Hall last year. Andrew Gaze comes from another country, takes a very good team, makes it great. Same scenario right here.
Clearly is. Nadav Hennefeld, otherwise known as the Dove, is doing it all for the Huskies. He's second in scoring, second in minutes played, leads the Big East in steals, and is second in the nation in steals.
And third time he's been named the Big East Rookie of the Week. He's just been one of the dominant players all year long in the conference. Providence playing well and led by a senior, Carlton Screen.
Carlton Screen, co-player of the week this week in the Big East by virtue of two big games against quality competition. He averaged 26 points and 9.5 assists last week. He's stepping it up a notch, taking games over with this penetration.
Carlton Screen likes to handle the ball. Connecticut likes to press. Something's got to give. The crowd is ready. Big Monday starts here in Connecticut.
The Huskies attacked early, taking 7-point leads twice at 12-5 and 16-9. But the Friars used a 10-0 run to take a 19-16 lead just past the halfway point of the first half. With PC up 23-22 with 6 minutes left, the Huskies picked up the pace.
Let's see if the Huskies get one of their better perimeter shooters a jump shot like this guy.
Like that?
Yeah, just like that.
Four for John Gwynn. Burton right back. Blocked by Sellers. Here's Gwynn the other way. Finds Walker. Gets it back and comes up shooting. That's the guy you want, right?
You've got to get your shooters the ball where they can score. Gwynn is a shooter.
UConn closed the half on a 17-5 run, capped off with another halftime buzzer beater.
Shot clock off. And a 5-second call on Screen.
There's a couple of feet between the defender and Screen.
Here's Smith. Would have been three. Bragg threw it away. Burrell for two. What has been a close game is now a double-digit game. The Huskies 39, the Friars 28 at halftime.
The second half saw the Huskies increase their lead to as much as 13 points.
His screen looking for the transition hoop.
Nice job by the Huskies to get back.
And the Dove Hennefell just took it away from Conlon. Up to Burrell. Big turnaround right there.
How about it, Nadeau?
A Tate George three-pointer with 8:06 left put the Huskies up 56-44. It was at that point that UConn went ice cold. Providence took full advantage of UConn's shooting woes. They trimmed the lead to 7 with 3:54 left, 59-52. The Huskies also lost their touch from the charity stripe. They had started the game going 13-14 from the foul line. After that, they missed 10 of their next 18. With 3:23 remaining in the game, UConn led 62-54. The Friars' Quentin Burton hit a three-pointer with 1:16 left to pull PC to within 1, 62-61. John Gwynn had a chance to increase the lead to 3 with 18 seconds left, but he was only able to make the front end of a 1-1. That gave Providence a chance to tie or take the lead.
Conlon comes down with a missed two-point game. Friars 2 for the tie, 3 for the win. Rick Barnes will not take a timeout. Screen to Conlon. Fires up a 3. It's short. Murdoch hits it. We're tied. 3 seconds to go. Connecticut calls time. We are looking at overtime.
The Huskies did not make a field goal in the final 8:06 of regulation as the game headed to overtime. It was the first overtime game of the season for UConn. At the 2-minute mark of OT, PC led 67-65. Then, Chris Smith took over. Smith scored on a drive to the hoop while drawing a foul. He hit the free throw and then promptly stole the ball after Providence inbounded it. He found George under the hoop for an easy layup, putting UConn up by 3, 70-67. After 4 missed free throws by the Friars, Smith hit 2 more free throws, making the score 72-67 UConn with a minute 35 left in OT. UConn led 72-69 with a minute to go when Scott Burrell was fouled after grabbing a defensive rebound. With a chance to extend the lead, Burrell missed the front end of the 1-1, keeping hope alive for the Friars.
Rebound to Shamsuddin, and Providence the ball and a chance to get to 1 or tie as we break a minute in overtime. 55 seconds.
Looks like a double for Murdoch, and he's wide open.
Comes out, buries a 3. We are tied at 72.
Great call, excellent execution. The Friars with the nice double screen away from the ball. Murdoch buried his man in the paint and came off wide open.
After Murdoch's clutch three-pointer, Jim Calhoun called timeout with 45 seconds remaining. There was a 4-second difference between the game clock and the shot clock. The Huskies worked the ball until about 5 seconds were left on the shot clock when Tate George made a move towards the hoop.
19 on the shot clock. About a 4-second difference between the two clocks. 10. 5. Hennefeld with 2. Gets it outside. A 3-point shot by Nadav Hennefeld with 1 second on the clock. But Rick Barnes now is arguing to get at least 1, maybe 2 seconds put back up.
The refs didn't add any additional time on the clock. And when Lyman Dupree stole the inbounds pass, the Huskies escaped with a 75-72 overtime victory. Here's Jim Calhoun and Nadav Hennefeld after the game.
I thought we acted in the last 4 or 5 minutes, mainly because it hasn't happened to us too much recently. A team really came back at us, and we were kind of unable to score. They were too, but they scored a few more hoops and tied the game up. And we acted like, oh my God, someone actually did this to us, as opposed to saying, hey, we got 5 more minutes, let's go out and beat them. And we yell at them, and we come out, they score a quick hoop, but then we play great.
When I came to pick for Ted, I looked at the clock, it was 6 seconds on the clock, and I just picked him. He went to the basket, I just backed off, looking for the other option, if he's going to the basket or not to pass me. He passed me the ball, I even didn't look at the clock. I think it was maybe in the last second or even after the last second, I just shot the ball and it went in.
UConn's defense was a difference in the game yet again. Despite shooting a lowly 37.9% from the floor and 65.6% from the line, the Huskies won the turnover battle, 24-14. That resulted in 10 more field goal attempts and the difference in the ballgame. Chris Smith paced the Huskies with 17 points, and Tate George added 16. The Huskies had won their 23rd game of the season, tying the 1953-54 and 64-65 teams for the most wins in a season. They were now 10-3 in the Big East, a half game ahead of second-place Georgetown. This was also the first close game in the history of Gamble Pavilion. As Coach Calhoun said after the game, this building lost its innocence tonight. Nadav Henefeld's game-winning three-pointer most likely marked the peak of Nadav mania in Connecticut. While the entire state of Connecticut was already awash in Husky mania, and the entire team were considered rock stars, Nadav's popularity rose to another level. Israeli flags were prominent in the crowd at Gamble. Invitations to bar mitzvahs arrived in the UConn Athletic Department daily. News stories detailing the success of both Nadav and UConn were eagerly awaited by fans back in Israel. How did Nadav cope with the sudden explosion of popularity?
Again, I don't think I could really get the real effect of what we did while I was during the season. Maybe after the season, yes. But I was really, this is also my character. I'm kind of, you know, I'm going back to, kind of finished the game, went back to my room, you know. Didn't really party. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do anything. And I just kind of wanted to go to sleep after a good game. I was tired and stuff like this. So, and I had my few friends who I was, you know, with when I was there. So, but people told me, I think there was maybe 20 something papers covered UConn. And when you start to have this kind of success. So I remember seeing in one of the papers, I think it was the USA Today, I think it was, the night of the biggest tournament, that they had was a picture of mine, I think, at the front page. And, you know, in the States, you go and, you know, you go to these boxes, you put a coin or whatever, how much it costs, and you open it, and you know, see my pictures are like, in this pile of papers, I was shocked. You know, I never, when I wanted to go and play college basketball, I never thought it's going to be like this. I just wanted to go and get the experience. I wanted to go and play and get better. I didn't know what's going on. I didn't really have plans to. I couldn't really mark my goal as I want to go to the NBA. You know, back then it was, you know, it's like back then it was like all these guys were like the best in the history of the NBA played. You know, it's like today. And that, you know, so many Europeans are coming and playing there.
The Huskies had 4 days to prepare for their next game, the final home game of the year on Saturday, February 24th against Seton Hall. On Wednesday, UConn received some good news when St. John's defeated Georgetown, putting the Huskies in sole possession of first place. If UConn could win their three remaining games, they would be outright Big East regular season champs and earn the number one seed in the upcoming Big East tournament. Seton Hall was up first. UConn had won at Seton Hall by just 3 points back in January, but the Pirates were finishing up a tough season. They entered the game with a record of 11-13, 4-9 in the Big East, and were led by freshman guard Terry DeHare. DeHare led all Big East freshmen in scoring with 16.6 points per game and was Nadav Henefeld's prime competition for the Big East Rookie of the Year award. The final home game of the season for UConn also meant the final home game for the Huskies' lone senior, Tate George. Tate had come a long way in his senior year. Early in his career, he seemingly had permanent residence in Calhoun's doghouse. He would arrive for practices, technically not late, but later than coach wanted, and after the rest of the team had arrived, earning him the nickname Late George. After helping lead UConn to the NIT title his sophomore year, Tate, quote, celebrated all summer, end quote. By the end of his junior year, he was losing minutes to freshman Chris Smith. When he asked Calhoun why that was, Calhoun explained that Smith's never-ending hours in the gym were giving him the edge. Tate was upset and accepted the challenge heading into his senior year. Said Tate, quote, I was upset with myself. I had never really worked on my game. I'd always done just enough to get by, end quote. He stayed on campus nearly the entire summer, helping to run the off-season program with co-captain Steve Peichel. He had one-on-one conversations with Coach Calhoun. He shot 500 jump shots a day, ran 2 to 3 miles daily, and lifted weights with strength coach Jay Hoffman. The results speak for themselves. Tate's scoring average had nearly doubled from 7.3 points per game as a junior to 12.3 this season. He's shooting 48.4% from the floor, up over 5%, and 13 from 39 from three-point range, compared to just 2 of 10 his junior year. Calhoun also trusted him more. Said Calhoun, quote, "He was always a leader, but now he shoots the ball better and he's resilient. He hasn't let things bother him," end quote. Heading into the pregame ceremony, Tate George held the UConn career records for most games played and most assists, and was only 3 steals away from owning that record as well. There were also more games ahead and opportunities to create some more memories.
Ladies and gentlemen, may we have your attention, please? During the past 4 seasons, the University of Connecticut basketball program has experienced some of the proudest moments in the institution's long history. Tonight's game against Seton Hall is the final game here in stores for a student athlete we're all very proud of. He's played in more games than any athlete in UConn basketball history. He has more assists than any basketball athlete in UConn history. He is one of 20 members of UConn's 1,000-point scoring club. He will complete his college career as the school's all-time steal leader, and he'll graduate this year with a degree in marketing. And after helping lead Connecticut to the 1988 National Invitation Tournament Championship as a sophomore, he will lead the 1989-90 UConn team, which he captains, into the 1990 NCAA Tournament. From Newark, New Jersey, number 32, our senior co-captain, Tate George.
Both teams started the game cold. The Huskies missed their first 5 shots from the floor, some of them by a lot. UConn finally broke the ice at the 17:43 mark on a Nadav Hennefeld runner in the lane. Not long after that, the Huskies were off and running.
Scott Burrell has checked into the game, the fine freshman for Connecticut. So Jim Calhoun, already 2.5 minutes into the game, has gone 7 deep. Tate George for 2.
Here's the Huskies' pressure after the made field goal.
Cooper nearly traveled. Picked off by Hennefeld. It's a 6-0 Husky run to open the game. And is this building loud?
This place really can rock.
Lokar in trouble and stolen by Burrell. Up to Smith. Blocked by Avent, but a foul is called.
PJ was really concerned about just what's happening. The Huskies able to score and put the heat on. And we talked about how good they are at taking the ball away from you. Here's the double team on the sideline, and they just take the ball. Scott Burrell, I don't know if I've seen a team, Mike, that has as many players that have the quick hands. And I think what's happened is that Nadav Hennefeld and Chris Smith have got this team believing that they're supposed to get 10 or 12 steals a game. And it's contagious, and they really go after the basketball.
Connecticut. DeHare able to find Avent in the middle. Cooper trying to take it quickly. Blocked out of bounds by Cerullo.
This is a game that Jim Calhoun probably wishes right now he could save for about 3 weeks.
I think you're exactly right.
It's like there's about 8 Huskies on the court right now. Oliver Taylor. That was partially blocked by Hennefeld. Here comes Burrell. Up to Hennefeld. Good look for Smith. Seton Hall needs and gets a timeout.
It's an 11-0 run to start the game.
The run would eventually increase to 13-0 before a Terry DeHare free throw put the Pirates on the board. The Pirates missed their first 8 shots from the floor. UConn eventually led 35-24 at the half and came out of the locker room just as they had ended the first half. A Tate George steal led to a quick dunk by Scott Burrell and helped spur a 22-9 UConn run to start the half. The Huskies led by as many as 24 in the second half on the way to a comfortable 79-57 victory. Chris Smith led the way in scoring for UConn with 21 points, while Tate George added 15 points and 5 assists. Nadav Hanifeld won the battle of the fabulous freshman, scoring 15 points and 5 of 6 shooting, while tying his career high in steals with 6. Terry DeHaere scored 16, but was 4 of 13 from the floor while committing a game-high 6 turnovers. The Huskies held the Pirates to 34% shooting and forced 22 turnovers. Said Calhoun, quote, "It was the hardest we've played defense in the past 2 to 3 weeks. We honestly had the feeling that they might not score," end quote. UConn improved to 24-4 on the season and set a school record for most victories in a season. Tate George tied Corney Thompson for the school record in steals with 179. With Georgetown cruising past Villanova, the stage was set for a showdown with the Hoyas on Wednesday night. If UConn could win either of their next two games, they traveled to Boston College the following Saturday, the Huskies would clinch at least a tie for the regular season Big East title, uncharted waters for the program. Based on the most recent Associated Press Top 25 poll, the Georgetown game would be a matchup between two top 10 teams, the 7th-ranked Hoyas and the 4th-ranked Huskies. The number 4 ranking marks another high-water mark for the UConn program. UConn was looking for their first win at Georgetown since the 1981-82 season. The Huskies won the first meeting this season at the Hartford Civic Center, 70-65, on January 20th. Coach Calhoun's game plan heading into the game was to eliminate the strength of the Hoyas, big men Alonzo Mourning and Dikembe Mutombo, by controlling the perimeter game and the guard position. The game started okay for the Huskies. They didn't start as well as they did in the first matchup, but they did lead by 5, 6:40 into the game. Then they went ice cold. UConn shot just 24.2% from the floor in the first half, a season low. Mutombo dominated the half, scoring 13 points and grabbing 11 rebounds, as the Hoyas took a 38-28 lead at halftime. Early in the second half, the Huskies made a run. Three-pointers from Tate George and Chris Smith were part of a 10-2 run that brought UConn to within 4, with 15:45 left in the game. Georgetown responded with back-to-back threes from Ronnie Thompson and Antoine Stoudemire, increasing their lead to 56-45 with 11:12 left in the game. Then the Hoyas went to work inside. Alonzo Mourning scored 15 of his 20 points in the second half, and with 6:27 left, the Georgetown lead had grown to 20, 66-46. The final score, Georgetown 84, UConn 64. The Huskies went nearly 7 minutes without scoring in the second half and only made 11 of 34 shots in the half. UConn finished 6 of 26 from three-point range. They could not get their offense flowing as the Hoyas completely took away any inside options for the Huskies. Said Calhoun, quote, "Georgetown didn't allow us to do any of the things we wanted to do," end quote. Mourning and Mutombo combined for 35 points and 26 rebounds, while Dwayne Bryant added 20 for the Hoyas. The Huskies were led by Chris Smith's 21, but those came on a poor shooting night for Smith, who was 7 of 26 from the floor, including 2 of 12 from 3. To add injury to insult, Rod Sellers tweaked his left knee, the same one that he had injured during the game at Pittsburgh. There was one item of positive news to report. Tate George recorded one steal to become UConn's all-time leader in that category. On the same night of the Georgetown loss, Syracuse defeated Seton Hall, which created a three-way tie atop the Big East standings. Each team had one game remaining, UConn at Boston College on Saturday, while Georgetown traveled to Syracuse on Sunday. The Huskies would clinch a share of the title with a win against the Eagles and would need some luck to be able to claim the top seed in the Big East tournament. Rod Sellers was still in the starting lineup on Saturday, despite the cumbersome brace on his left knee. He was joined by the usual grouping of Nadav Hanifeld, Lyman DePriest, Chris Smith, and Tate George. Calhoun had used the same starting lineup for the previous 5 games. Clark Kellogg and Gil Santos of the Big East Television Network set the stage.
Live from the Conti Forum on the campus of Boston College in Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts, tonight it's the final weekend of Big East Conference basketball as the University of Connecticut Huskies go for their first Big East Conference championship, while the last-place Boston College Eagles look to spring the big upset. There you look at the conference standings with UConn, Syracuse, and Georgetown all at 11-4. A Connecticut win tonight guarantees them a share of the conference championship. Boston College can play loosey-goosey. They've got nothing to lose. A win tonight, and it would be a morale booster for them heading into the Big East tournament next weekend. Good evening, everyone. I'm Gil Santos along with Clark Kellogg. This place will be sold out. There'll be a lot of noise here tonight as UConn and Boston College battle for the second time in the conference season. Clark, the keys for UConn to come out of this with a victory tonight?
Well, the first thing they have to do is forget about what happened on Wednesday night. They were handed a 20-point loss by the Georgetown Hoyas. They're also going to have to get a more balanced scoring attack, Gil. They got most of their points from the perimeter, from their backcourt people. They'll need to have more scoring from their upfront people. Last but not least is a healthy Nadav Henefeld. He's had an outstanding year, but was a little under the weather prior to the Georgetown game. Is feeling much better tonight. Should be playing at full strength.
It was a sellout crowd of 8,604 in the Conti Forum, but at least half of that number were rooting for the visitors. Halfway through the first half, the score was tied at 18, as both teams exchanged the lead several times. With UConn up 27-24 with just under 8 minutes left in the half, the Huskies went on a 9-0 run, led by John Gwynn, who scored 6 of his 13 points for the game during that stretch. The Huskies led 46-36 as BC had the ball with 20 seconds left in the half.
Edwards gets one of two, but the ball is kept alive by Pruitt, and BC will have a chance for the final shot of the half. Trailed by as many as 12, Edwards, heck of a job with the left hand, doesn't get it, but following it is Beasley to tip it in. Seconds remaining in the half. Tate George coast to coast. How about that? Tate George finishes the first half with a flourish, and the University of Connecticut now just 20 minutes away from sharing the Big East Conference regular season championship. We've come to the end of the first half. UConn by 10.
UConn earned that 10-point lead in large part to 23 trips to the foul line, where they converted 21. The Eagles, on the other hand, only attempted 8 free throws, making 4 of them. The Huskies also forced twice as many turnovers as they committed, 14-7. In the second half, UConn increased their lead to 56-41 with 16 minutes left. Boston College responded with an 11-2 run of their own to make it a 6-point game, 58-52. But Henefeld answered with the second 3-pointer of the game, and the Eagles would never get closer than 8 points the rest of the way.
This is the biggest jump from one year to the next in Big East Conference history, as Connecticut will go to 25-5 with this victory tonight. And now a whole bench full of reserves come onto the floor for the University of Connecticut, and their starting unit or their regulars go off the floor to a standing ovation from all the Connecticut fans who made the trip up the road, the 2-hour drive from stores here to Boston College. Last season, they were in 7th place at 6-10. And to come into a first-place tie this year at 12-4, it is the biggest jump in one season in Big East history, moving 6th position. That's really an amazing turnaround season for Jim Calhoun's team.
It really is, and it continues to be so because they're not done. They came in here businesslike and took care of business tonight. A game they had to win enemy's floor, although with the number of Huskies fans here, it's almost like a home game for them.
Outstanding effort by Connecticut here tonight, led by that man, Nadav Henefeld, our Plymouth player of the game, with 18 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, a block, had at least 1 steal, and just a heck of an all-around player.
And really, when Boston College was keeping close early, Henefeld was the key player with his perimeter shooting for the Huskies.
Rebound by Michaels on the baseline, misses the shot. Walker, the ball is knocked out of bounds by Boston College. It'll be UConn ball. So the Connecticut Huskies will claim a share of the Big East Conference regular season championship. And depending on what happens in all the other games, will depend on where UConn will be seated in the tournament. They will be either number one or number two. And they will share the championship for the season, regular season, with either Syracuse or Georgetown, whichever of those two wins tomorrow. Shearer with a turnaround jump shot, and he gets it. With 2 seconds and the ball game ends, a 21-point rout for the University of Connecticut Huskies, and they end up as the Big East Conference co-champions. Our final score at the Conti Forum. On the campus of Boston College, the Big East Conference co-champion Huskies of Connecticut win it 95-74.
As Gil Santos mentioned in the previous clip, the Huskies' jump from 7th place the previous season to 1st place this season marked the largest improvement between seasons in Big East history. and that seventh place finish was the highest that UConn had ever finished in the conference. The following day, Syracuse defeated Georgetown in overtime, 89-87, which gave Syracuse the number one seed in the Big East tournament. UConn would be the number two seed and Georgetown the three. Regardless, UConn's share of the Big East regular season title marked a new high for the program. UConn's longtime director of athletic communications, Tim Tolokin, on the achievement.
We go to BC, and of course, Jim loved, and we had such great success under Jim against BC. We win the game that shares the title with Syracuse at 12-4 by beating BC at BC. And we're back. We go back to the locker room. And I think Howie was the first guy with that deep, gruff voice of his. Champions, we're champions. And the kids picked up on that. And to hear that, you know, you had won an NIT, but we were picked eighth. We usually play in the 8-9 game. And you weren't champions. You were atop the Big East Conference 10 years in, and you now had something to hang your hat on against, as Jim always would say, against your neighbors, against the people you went to war with every day. And that night in Boston, was pretty good. Jim stayed behind with family and everything because it was that special.
Jim Calhoun concurs.
You know, the NIT, we have a championship. It wasn't, quote, the championship, but it was a special championship. Now you're going to win the Big East. And I've told people, you know, I was talking to somebody a week ago, and they said, Coach, it's been great. You've won three national championships, all of that. So those are important. But, you know, our 17 Big East championships, that's in our neighborhood. And everybody likes to win in the neighborhood or win their house, win against their brothers or their best friends and that type of thing. And that's what I felt about it. And I felt it took us 4 years to get there from the 8-9 game to Big East champs. And I had so much respect for Dave Gavitt, the league, my fellow coaches. I mean, you talk about from Rick Pitino to Louis Conseco to Rolly Massimino to Jimmy O'Brien to Jim Boeheim to John Thompson, God rest his soul. And my point being, a special, special time. And, you know, people ask me, you know, do you think we'll see this again? I said, no, you won't see the first time ever again. That's a whole different kind of deal. And I think that that's who we at UConn now aspire to be. I mean, when people sometimes criticize UConn basketball, you know, if you used to be eating steak and they give you a hamburger, you aren't going to find it that tasty. And I guess I'm being a little facetious, but you know, our standard really was pretty high, and that was a changing moment nationally. People knew we were going to be a player.
Hartford Current columnist Alan Greenberg attempted to put the title into perspective. From Greenberg's column on Sunday, March 4th, 1990, "I've never been so proud of what this team has accomplished," UConn coach Jim Calhoun said. "It's a tremendous accomplishment for us. Even I smiled." The last time Jim Calhoun smiled that easily was that May day in 1986 when he left Northeastern to become UConn's head coach. But then it was a nervous smile. Calhoun's job was to bring respectability to a program that had none. The university gave him a 7-year contract. Some wondered if the job could be done in 70. Last season's Huskies finished 7th. Nobody held a parade, but they might have. For the first time in 3 seasons, Calhoun's Huskies had escaped the Big East tournament's opening round match between the 8th and 9th place teams that has played before thousands of empty seats, the Booby Prize game. At UConn, this is what passed for progress. No more. Fair or not, future UConn teams will be compared to this one. Big East champions. Coming up on the next episode of the Dream Season podcast, UConn travels to Madison Square Garden for the Big East tournament. The Dream Season podcast is researched, written, and produced by me, Matt Edwards. Written sources for this episode are the Hartford Current Archives and the Norwich Bulletin. Audio content is from interviews that I conducted and YouTube. You can connect with the show via Twitter and Instagram at Dream Season Pod. If you have any memories to share about anything I just mentioned, want to correct me on something I screwed up, or just have general feedback to give, send me an email at dreamseasonpod@gmail.com or call and leave me a message at 903-884-8990. Thank you so much, Dave from South Kent, for your feedback. After I'm done with the regular episodes of the show, I'd love to have at least one episode that consists entirely of your memories of the Dream Season. Either leave a message at the above number or email me with an audio recording of your recollections, along with your name and location, and I will include them in that episode. As always, thank you so much for listening.